search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Broken by Concept, episode 160. I'm back from China. So we took a week off.
Yep.
Spent 2 weeks in China, came back yesterday.
Got some new shirts.
Some new shirts here.
I mean, our merchandise is long. It's going to take years, guys.
Not years, right? But
these are test products.
We got some test products from China to see what the material is like. So we're doing a bit of
investigation
to see what's out there. This one was a little bit tight as well, but seems okay. But so I think it was. Feel out some other products before we.
Yeah, but if you're going to ask, we've got nothing even in the horizon.
Nah. Get angry. Don't get angry. Just don't get angry.
We're going to say get angry expectations.
Just don't get angry at either of us.
We're managing expectations, Curtis.
Yeah, okay? This is be real. Look, I want to kind of talk about a few things from my trip.
So did you play some solo queue, Curtis? What's going on?
I played a little bit of solo queue.
I made the announcement because I wanted to make sure it wasn't a boot camp for you. It was like a vacation
family
thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't even really say it was a vacation. I guess it was a vacation, kind of a vacation. More seeing my partner's family over in China. But
you're not there to play solo queue. You're not boot camping.
No. And so essentially, you know, for me, this trip was, you know, we're in the West, right? And it was very eye-opening to see what true Chinese culture was about. I kind of want to talk about the things that I feel like are relevant to League.
Hmm.
What I will say is that, you know, in Australia anyway, you know, from an education perspective, you know, they're very good at we're not confronted with rankings that much. Like in class, you know, you're not really ranked in terms of you're the best student, worst student, ranked 3 student, 4 student. In China, it starts very, very young. You're ranked, you're rated, and this isn't just in education. It's in many, many areas of life in China. You know, people are very comfortable with comparison. It's deeply just embedded into the culture. You know, the idea that someone is better than you at this or has more than you than or less than you and you are here and they're there. This whole idea of comparing and comparison and ranking and rating, it's so deeply embedded that there's no flinching. It's okay, or they accept it, that you are going to be compared. You are worse than someone or better than someone. And it's just publicly displayed.
Hmm.
And so
you were talking about that the schools are like literally like the number is in their title.
Yeah, like this is school number this is school number that. It's very public.
And like you can obviously Google and search that up for our schools, but it's not as pushed or out there.
That's right. And so I think that you know, I think this definitely has an effect on like the way people in China view you know, comparing themselves with others. There is no, oh my God, that person might think they're better than me, or that person might be, I don't want to compare myself with that person. No, that doesn't exist. It is just like, everyone is comfortable with that idea. And I believe that, you know, from my limited time, I played a good few hours, there's 11 games straight. So I just had a limited amount of time. I had to just play as much as I could in this little time. I had a diamond, an account that finished diamond the last split one, because it was early on in the season. So it was diamond MMR, playing with other people with diamond MMR. And, you know, one of my observations, and just really thinking about it from a cultural perspective, is that, yeah, there was no, I can see, I can feel, and just my vibe and talking to people and just the whole experience, there is no fear of comparison. There's no, that's not going to impact the way you navigate or you perform. And I feel like in Chinese solo queue, an element of it and the way they conduct themselves on the Rift is that, they don't have that problem of overthinking and thinking too much about what other people are thinking of them. That is just kind of what it is. So there's that. That's observation number one. And I will say, you know, I'm not going to say I'm an expert here, but what I will say is that I think that China is an incredibly complicated country. And I think that the solo queue is, we don't truly understand why it is like it is. Like I can give, I'm going to try and talk about some, my my observations, why the Chinese solo queue is played the way it is and why the players play the way they do and why the servers, everything is like it is. But again, there's probably a lot more at play here. So the first thing I wanted to bring up, make it clear, is that there is this comfortability with comparison and rating, okay? The second thing is that they have an incredibly hardcore work ethic and work culture, right? So to give context, my nephew in China, he's like 6 years old. They go to school from 7:30 in the morning to 7:30 at night. That's at 6 years old, right? You work hard, you work long hours, you grind from the youngest possible age.
And that is because you need to be able to climb that ranking, right?
You need to be able to differentiate yourself from the other millions and millions and millions of people.
Because they have so many
people. It's very competitive, right? And it's the same thing as why in China, the food can't be bad. You can't. The service can't be bad. Everything has to be good because you will get weeded out by someone else who does it better and cheaper and more effective than you. Because there is so many. It's such a competitive country in that sense, which has a lot of positives because you can get things on demand. You can get good quality things on demand, and things are cheaper and more efficient and better. But obviously, it comes at some other costs at play there as well.
You had that internet story?
Yeah. So when I went to a place and we had an internet problem at 11 p.m., on a Sunday night or something. And we called up the internet service provider. They had someone come at 7 a.m. the next morning.
Just straight up rocking up boom. There. No questions asked. Fix it, asked.
Boom, no question. Done. And I'm like, yeah. In Australia, that would have taken 2 weeks to get someone to come here. You know, it's just so hard to get people to come fix your internet.
Yeah.
It's just not feasible. And then they're definitely not going to send a person. You're going to be on a call for like 3 hours talking to a call center. And then it'll just be a nightmare.
Yep.
Right. So there's that. So I think that, the work ethic and the work culture. So I think that they are very comfortable sitting there and playing a bulk amount of games for a very long period of time and grinding games because that's what they do in everything. In everything. In work, they work long hours. They do the 9-9-6, right? The 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. They do the incredible school hours. They do after-school programs. Their work ethic and the way they focus is just incredibly high, much higher, especially from Australia, where I would say we're very lazy comparatively to that. So I think that there's something to be said there about that work ethic and work culture, which, especially with a game like League, that requires so much intuition and pattern recognition, I think they get a lot of benefit from that, okay? I will say, though, in my experiences, and again, these are just my experiences, it felt like there was a very low level of thought and creative expression and there was almost thinking. So in Lane, for example, let's just speak specific.
We love specifics.
So I play, again, this is the Diamond MMR. The meme is, you know, Korea and China Diamond is Osh Challenger. And I'm going to tell you right here, it was the worst laning I've basically ever, without exaggeration, I genuinely think some of the time in Diamond, in Osh, you would get better laners. You wouldn't get better skirmishes ever or better team fighting, but you would get better laners. There is incredibly unsophisticated wave management, resets, overstaying to the max. I'm not even exaggerating. Terrible wave management, basically zero. From a creative macro strategic perspective, little to no, none of that. But the skirmishing and the team fighting was incredibly sophisticated, and they made intuitively good decisions in fights. But I think, again, that goes to show as a testament to what their strengths are and the way they conduct their practice. So I think that, I can't speak for the high elos. I didn't have the opportunity to play in the high elo brackets. So I can't comment on that. But at least in Diamond, that's what it was like. So there's no comparison to high elo Oaths and Diamond in China. It's not even on the same...
Or NA or EU, obviously.
No, exactly. And you can say the same for NA or EU. It's not even in the same ballpark. So that narrative can be very, very quickly dispelled. I do think that there is something to be said as well with, you know, gaming in China. It's very deeply embedded in the sense that everyone is playing mobile games. Like, I think it's very accepted. Like, everyone is on mobile games all the time, everywhere. But it's also not accepted at the same time, since because you need to be working and progressing and climbing, and is again tying back to that culture of comparison. So I think that when they do have time to play, they play hard. So I will say there's something there as well. So overall, I think that I would love to get the opportunity to play, you know, Master Plus in China. I didn't because the split reset, so I actually couldn't actually get an account that was Master because they didn't really have them. So that's kind of on the books. So probably have to go. We'll probably go to Korea before I go back to China anyway. So yeah, that's kind of my limited experiences. But if I had some questions a bit holistically about the trip, I think the food was amazing. Like the architecture is very beautiful, and a lot of the culture and tradition is beautiful. But at the same time, I think there's, you know, the smoking culture and the drinking culture and all that was pretty intense and not for me.
A bit of a shock.
A very big shock. Yeah.
Do we want to talk a little bit about? I mean, you talk a lot about the comparison and stuff like that. Mm. Obviously, our podcast is very much about focus on yourself, process, the results come, right? Is there talk of like process at all there? Like, what's process?
Okay, well, yeah, it's a good question, actually, because they are incredibly sophisticated with process in terms of study.
Yeah.
Like they have got that down. Like they know how to really learn things at school.
To a T, yeah.
Like they know how to really effectively and efficiently study things.
Mm.
Again, because gaming isn't really viewed in that way or taken kind of seriously,
it hasn't been applied.
Has been applied yet. Yeah. And I think that this is the thing. This is the challenge they face. And I'm assuming it's very similar in Korea because of the way, again, the way their society is structured. But again, speaking just for China, is that you've always got that looming fear of that there is someone else out there doing it more than me because there's just so many people. And I think that, like, you can have any process you want, but I feel like that pressure and that, like, if you're someone in China that is in the position to take gaming seriously or even trying to take gaming seriously, I don't think you're ever going to be in a scenario where you're not going to play a absolute metric ton of games because everyone else is.
The thought will never be, I'll play less, higher intensity.
Balance, I'm going to just say this straight up. There is no such thing as balance in China. Balance in work-life balance in anything, in everything, is thrown out the window. China is a country of extremes. For example, food-wise, right? You never order the right amount. You always order an extreme amount of food. They always, because it's a showing of ego and like, oh, I provided you this amazing meal and look at how much food there is. I want you to feel like there was more than enough
food. You can never complain that there wasn't
enough food. Yeah. And like and this, in terms of the studies, it's extreme. In terms of poverty, you know, elite, and it's extreme. It is an extreme country. And I think that, you know, there would never be, I don't think there ever can be, because of their culture, a measured, you know, approach to improvement in league. It's always going to be the absolute extreme.
Mm.
And I think that the way they cover for the weaknesses in that approach is that you've just got too many people.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be outliers. You've always got the benefit of doing an unscalable or in a quote unquote inefficient approach, because this will be compensated by the scale of the population. If we went about this, if we did this approach in a country like Australia, it wouldn't work because we don't have the population. We wouldn't have the amount of outliers required to overcompensate for the inefficiency of the way the practice is done. So I will say that that's just kind of the way it is. That's just the way their culture is structured. And I think everything, the way things are done in China is to be able to provide for that many people, you know? So, very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting hearing the stories and stuff. And yeah, it sucks that you didn't get to play that much, but you also were talking about as well that when you played against these players, you felt like you couldn't read them, their emotions.
So for those of you who've watched the documentary AlphaGo, AlphaGo was essentially a documentary about the game Go, right? It's kind of like that strategic game where you kind of take territory. It's kind of like a board game. And this world champion, who was like the Korean guy, right? Basically the documentary followed his journey against a piece of AI software. And with, you know, if you haven't watched it, probably you want to pause this if you do want to watch it, so there's going to be spoilers here. But essentially there's this scene where he versus the AI, I think, for one of the first times, and he never versed it before. And then he's like, it just has no... I can't feel the opponent. I can't feel the AI. It has no... He was trying to describe how it felt to verse this opponent, because when you get very, very good at any craft, you can feel your opposition. You can read your opposition. Like for me, when I play right now in my server right now, I can feel and read the emotion of my opponent. I can feel frustration. I can feel anger. I can feel when they're really stressed. I can feel when they're anxious. I can feel when they're really eager. I can feel when they're overreaching. I can feel and understand them at a very human level. It's very clear to me through their actions and the decisions and the way they make, the way they do things. When I was in China for my 11-ish games, it was very, very difficult for me to feel anything. I felt incredibly disconnected from my opponents. It wasn't... Now, and again, I want to be careful because it could just be I'm not familiar with the way they play League. Mm. And maybe with time, as I put more time on that server, you know, maybe I would be able to feel them and understand them. But from my... But I will say in those games, there was no feeling. It felt like I was versing some sort of robot that was making decisions.
That's what I think he used the word to describe it in the AlphaGo documentary, the Korean World Champion. He said it was cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Like calculated.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they were calculated,
not
but it was very cold.
Sorry, but cold, yeah.
Yeah, cold. It was like they were making decisions without... It was like... I wouldn't say they didn't make sense, but it was very just like just decisions that I wouldn't make, and I'm just so disconnected from it.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? Kind of.
You just can't...
I don't understand what mindset you would have to be in to make that decision.
Interesting.
Right? And again, that could be the way... And I still, to this day, don't understand why they want to level one flip a game. Like, I don't get that. Mm. I really don't get that. Mm. And I'm sure there's an explanation for why. No matter what your comp is, I don't know why.
Really? Because I'm sure people are saying, well, Curtis and Nathan, people level one coin flip in our games, but this is to a new extreme. Yeah,
every game.
Every game. Yeah. So what are we talking about? Do they invade?
You just run at the dot bush and then scrap.
Wait, to the
I'll just bring back as much as I can.
To the bot dot bush or the top one?
Like the river around mid.
Oh, to the bot one or the top one?
The bot one.
So everyone goes to the bot one. Both
teams. I think it was on like, if I remember correctly, it was at least I think around 90% of the games.
Really?
It's like I think it was like 9 out of 11.
No matter what.
Yeah.
They could
no matter what your comp was.
Yumi, yeah. Israel and shit.
Doesn't matter. They're fighting.
Wow.
I didn't want to fight on one
so
of
you're
them.
You're spamming.
I was trying to, but they were getting going. So like, fine, gotta go. Really? Yeah, gotta go.
Wow.
But I will say again, there were two observations I made about if I were to go back to China and play seriously. There are two ways to be successful in that region, right? With the way those games play out. You've got two options from a mid laner's perspective. Mm. Number one, you can take the approach of being very... Just screw everyone else, get strong, and take over the game later. And that is an incredibly reliable... I remember I played a game where I played Syndra. I just like... Just sat there in lane. I didn't adapt to the chaos. Mm. I said, fuck off everyone. Mm. And then went up like 70 CS and just dominated in mid game. Mm. Right? You can do that. Right? And I feel like you could play a scaling champ. You could sit there and play a Kassadin. You could play a Vlad. You could play a Yi. And you could farm your ass off reliably. Say no and farm and scale and carry and win. That is a very, in my opinion, if I were to go back, that would be something that I would actively try to do. Alternatively, you can say, you know what? Okay, all this chaos is happening. I'm just going to play something that plays fast and that can just capitalize on that chaos and be at those fights and win those fights and take over a game. You can play like a Fizz or a Pantheon Or in, that's why we say there was so much Pike. Pike was in like 90% of the games. Like play a Pike, play a Zoe, play a Rumble. You can do that. And that would work incredibly well as well. So both work. That is also why on the Chinese Super Server, the, one of the highest, there's like a super, super high ranked Kassadin player and a super high ranked Fizz player. You can play both. You can play both styles. So I think that that is the mindset that I would have going in. Which one do you want to do? From a mid laner's perspective. So, yeah.
Very interesting. All right. So I think that's, I don't think I have any other questions around your China.
Yeah. And again, I think that there was, I didn't have the opportunity to play more than that. No. So I can't speak for.
I guess it was just quick observations, right? Just some things.
Yeah. They're just my quick observations. That's right.
All right. So speaking of other servers, if you might have seen on Twitch TV recently, if you go to the League of Legends category, like all like the big streamers, everyone's gone to Korea. There's the sort of the campaign's called The World Invades Korea. it says here on this website here, tractif.com, streamers, influencers, and pros from around the world are competing on the Korean server. They sort of like do like a sort of a race to, you know, rank one or wherever it is. So it's been really interesting to see all the different players and people from different regions and stuff like that. Obviously, we're from OS. We've got Midbeast, obviously, representing the Oceanic server. I don't know if you call that representing, but he's over there. And yeah, what I want us to do here, guys, today, we always talk about champions, champion pools. Everyone's thinking like, I've got to have a diverse champion pool. Let's look at what we would call, these are professional solo queue players. Would you agree? These people get paid, most of them, to play.
That's a good way of putting it.
They're professional players. Like this is, if you have the time to go to Korea in the middle of the year, to spend multiple weeks there.
And a lot of money.
And a lot of money. You're probably pretty serious about the game. Would you agree?
Yep.
Like these people aren't going there to, you know, play
casually.
You know, play casually, right? So let's look at the way these players, what they're doing with their champions. How are they climbing? What's their strategy to climb? Because again, these people want to climb. They want to prove to the world that they're really good. So what I did here is there's, again, this website here, trackdiff.com. And it has all of the streamers and pros there. I think there's about 41 on this list. And what we're going to do here, guys, is we're going to go through like the first 15 or so their OPGGs. And let's just sort of observe things and take observations. All right, so the rank one player here currently, on the track diff. So the number one, the highest ranked Western player in Korea at the moment is Aguren. He's currently ranked 3 on the ladder at 1,000 LP. And we'll talk about Gurren a bit little bit later off this episode. But first, we'll just, again, we're just looking at this champ here. So let's look at what he's done here with his journey. He's got Jarvan and Elise. You'll say he's probably play and Nocturne. Would you call this a champ pool of three?
Yeah, three. That looks like a three champ pool to me. He's got, he's definitively, you know, loving his Jarvan Elise. But then he's also got a decent amount of Nocturne, which is kind of, to me, looks like a core two with like a complementary third.
Yep.
Which is interesting.
All right, so our second highest ranked person is, this is Sears?
I
don't know who that is. He's a support player. He's rank 11 on that server currently. So he plays Raul, looks like Raul, Pike, Norris. I'd say this is a pretty diverse pool,
very,
right?
Very diverse pool. He's you know, definitively got at least...
It's about six champions.
Six champs in his pool, like definitively. Which is actually backs up what Cupcake said. We spoke a while ago with Cupcake and he said that a support...
He thinks that has to be the role with the most diverse champion pool.
Yeah. And it does kind of make sense in a way, right? Because... Your mental stack is probably a little bit less occupied, so you probably can afford to play more. And he just thinks it's the role that is best with counterpick. It is most influence with counterpick. So very interesting.
We've got a third person here. This is, I think, Griffin from North America. He is currently sitting at rank 13. So it looks like here, Kindred, Graves. I mean, mostly I'd say it looks like he's gained all his ELO really with Kindred, 65%.
Yes, so he's got 71 games with Kindred. And then the next top highest player is Graves. So it's like under, you know, half. So the majority of his games play with Kindred.
So would you say this is more so just one champion or?
Well, this one's interesting though, because he, you know, look, 33 games here of Graves with a 50 apes in winning. I would say Graves is definitively in his pool.
Yeah.
But then it kind of looks like all the other champs haven't really given him much. I mean, I guess Ivan with the 27 games played, but like I would say that he definitely has a 5-champ pool.
Yep.
Right?
Okay.
I would say he's comfortably got a 5-champ pool, but he's out. He looks like his kindred is significantly better than everything else. That's where most of his LPs come from, yeah.
Let's look at our fourth person. Yes, this is rank 20. This is Alois.
Alois.
Just Riven, straight up. Riven one trick, only play Riven 180 games. He has 60% win rate. Then next up, we've got World's Champion, who is Fools. He's an Azir one trick. So we've got another one trick here. Straight up 250 games, Azir, like literally, obviously, only that. Mm. Next one, we got Wixie. I think he's like an NA second tier player.
Is he 80 carry?
80 carry, yeah. And we've got Ezreal. I'll say this is probably a 2-champ pool. Two champions.
Yeah, it looks... Yeah. Well, it's interesting because...
He has a high win rate with Zyra as well.
Well, it looks to me he's got a core 2, and then he has like a bunch of others that are kind of like very niche picks, kind of. Like, it's like, oh, if this is a Kog'Maw game, I'll play Kog. If this is a Zyra game, I'll play Zyra, you know? So to me, it looks like mainly 2. That's where most of his LP is coming from, but then he has like those very niche. That is actually what I would have expected, and that's what I do recommend to most. It's like you have a core 2 or 3, and then you should be able to like whip out a 4th, 5th. You know, if you're like, if you really want to take solo queue seriously, it's like core 2 or 3, and then yeah, 4th niche pick. Maybe a 5th if it's a super easy champ.
Next up, we've got TF Blade. He's currently ranked 78, 500 LP challenger, and that's probably just Jack's one trick, yeah?
He's got 40 games with Garen. 40 games with Garen.
Maybe like 2?
And 34 games with... I would say it's more of like a... It's definitely overwhelmingly a Jack's main, but I would say that he... I think that's like a pool of 1, but with 2 complementary picks.
Complementary, like that's the way you'll describe it. Yeah.
Again, it's hard to say because like what actually is having a champ in your pool?
Yeah.
Like, what does that actually mean?
Mm.
Because you've got to remember when you have a champ pool of say 3 champs, right? It never means that you can play 3 all of them to the exact same degree. Like there's always going to be some difference in the pool. Like, you could have one that's at, like, 98% competence, and then one at 90%, and then one at 75%, you know?
But that 75%
still means you're in your pool.
It's like a better pick in that game, so that's going to sort of, like, increase it to, like, a, let's say if that one, that your main champion, right. You know,
you can't, like 98%. You kind of compensate for that lack of mastery with picking it in better positions. That's right. Like, I think that, you know, what we're seeing here is that a lot of these players seem to have like 1 or 2 champs that they're really comfortable on, and then
they have sort of like some side champions.
Yeah, some side champions. So it's like, again, are they really like, in their pool?
It's sort of like, yeah, like we gotta like, when people wonder what people think when they think about my champion pool is like 3 champions. Yeah. Does that mean they think every champion's an even amount played?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what they mean. I think
we've never really talked about that. What does the distribution look like?
Well, you know? Let's have this conversation. I think it's actually really important because champ pool is such an important topic. Look, I'll start by saying that I think in order to have, and I'm going to speak again from my experiences, I think if you are we'll just take Master Plus. If you want to have, if someone comes into my program and says, I want to get Challenger, you know, how many champs should I play? I actually have right now. He was a grandmaster, Casio one trick, came into my program, and he wants to get Challenger, and he wants to actually kind of go pro / get a collegiate scholarship. And I said, well, you shouldn't be a one trick, right? We got to expand your pool. The reality is that you need to have, I would say, extreme competence on at least 2 champions. Like, I'm talking like 90, if we're going to give it a rating out of 0 to 100, you need to have like top 98, 97, 90, like really high 90s, right? I think your 3rd champ still needs to be pretty high. I think you still need to be like 90, 89, 88, like up there. And then I think a 4th, and you know, I'll say a 4th champ can be like significantly lower, like a niche counter pick. And then depending on the person, you know, like a 5th, maybe. Now, I don't think 5th's necessary. I think 4's great. I don't think 5th's really... I think 5th can even be a bit overkill. But if you did have a 5th, again, it would have to be an easy counter big champ that you would only have maybe like, you know, 75% competence or whatever it might be. So my main point being there, I think you need to have like a small amount of ones that you absolutely are amazing at, and a small amount that are that like you're using as a counter pick, you know? So like I said, four champs, 98, 99 type thing, and then one champ at like that 85, and then one champ at like the 75.
So do you think that at the extreme competence, two champs?
I think it's if we're talking like climbing to like high challenger, like you're not going to get...
That's not what we've seen. We've seen all these RPGs are showing us what's one champion, and then
it's basically the others, one.
It's like two others like that are like way less.
It's like 99 or 98.
Let's use it. I think TF Blades is a great example.
Yeah, it is a great example, yeah.
So like one champion, Jack's 150 games, yeah. And then he's got Garen 40 games, and then Aurelia about 40 games as well.
Well, what was Aguren's? Go back to Aguren, because I think he's obviously the person with the most success, right?
Yeah.
Well, his is... Like, I think he backs up mine, doesn't he?
He does back up yours,
so he's got Jarvan at 113 games, and he's got Elise at 88 games. He looks...
So obviously, Jarvan's his best.
But he's stream competence on both of these. And then he's got a third that's still pretty good. Like, I would say that's like maybe an 80%, right? 80, 85%. And then he's got like a Kha'Zix here probably at 70%. That's exact. That if I were to go to Korea, that's what mine would probably look like.
So two extreme competence.
Like two extreme competence, yeah. And then a third that's still really good, and then like a fourth that's like just counterpicked and I'm not amazing at. That's at least that's the way I would like to think I would go about it. Because I feel like that gives you, again, I feel like for me, the most flexibility across a lot of games.
A large amount of games. So it's interesting, right? So it's like, so you know, people's like, okay, well, you know, let's say our audience, you know, they're not professional solo queue players. I think you should just go and demonstrate it. You got to have extreme competence. You got to really build that first. You can't go thinking that it's going to be three champions and they're going to be equal.
No.
It just doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
Right? Yeah. And as we're seeing this here, I mean, these are the best players in the world who've invested a lot of time and money. This is how they're climbing. Really interesting to observe this.
It is interesting, yeah.
I want to just go quickly flick through some of the others here. So, but we've also got a very big mix as well of just straight up one tricks.
Well, like, Dante.
There's Dante's 300 games with the Hecarim, and then second is...
Well, that's basically one trick, yeah, I would say.
Diana, 27 games with really poor rate after that.
Yeah, so that's
right?
Basically one
41%
trick.
41% win after that. Then we've got Spearshot.
One trick.
One trick Pantheon, 250 games. There's nothing else. Literally just looks like must dodge or I don't know.
Yeah.
Pantheon probably doesn't get banned, right? He's a Pantheon. Then we have
Elite 500. Elite 500,
straight up Vlad.
Vlad, one trick.
Then we've got Mid-Beast. Would you call that a one trick?
So he...
Talia.
Just Talia. Yeah, so he's... Oh, okay.
Again, we can see, I have to say, these two other champs are in his pool, Lissandra and Zoe, yeah. Right? So he would have extreme competence.
But his is weird, though, because I think... Okay, well, Mid-Beast... I don't know why he's doing what he's doing. Because I feel like Mid-Beast, having versed him a lot, right? I think he does have very high competence on... He's always loved Talia. Like, he's been... Like, that's his baby, right? He's always played a lot of Talia. But I feel like he's... The way he's such a confidence player. Like, I feel like if he's doing well on a champ, he'll just play a lot of that champ.
Got it. Yeah.
And that's how I always felt with Mid-Beast. Yeah.
He goes through his phases.
I feel like he's a bit of a phase. He's been playing the game for so long. He's like an OG gamer. He can kind of like, I think...
He's built champ master on a lot of
champs. Yeah, he's built a lot of champ master in these champs. So I think, like, if I were to look at this objectively, though, you wouldn't say... Like, I would say that he's got, like, only one champ with, like, high competence. And like the other lists, Zoe, Syndra, look pretty, you know, mediocre, I would say. But I can't tell if this is just the strategy he's doing with, because I think it wouldn't surprise me if he shifted up his strategy where he just did a shit ton of Zoe or something, you know?
Looks like maybe he's going on a Zoe grind.
Yeah, it looks like he's going on a Zoe grind.
Yeah.
But I will say, from versing him in solo queue, there is a huge difference between his Talia and then all his other champs, like his TF and his Zoe and his Cassio and stuff. Like, it's like not even on the same level, not even close. So,
well, it's interesting because going back to Aguren's known for his Kha'Zix. He's been ranked on Kha'Zix all the time, but he's barely played that.
I will say, this is my observation about Mid-Beast, and again, I haven't spoke to him about his pool or anything. I think he was very strategic this time around. I think because he's been to Korea quite a few times, right? He knows.
Yep.
Talia is very good at covering what I think is his weakness, Mid-Beast's weakness. Talia is the anti dive anti-assassin champion. It is so good into like all these champs like Yasuo and Aurelia and like all these champs that have dashes. And I feel like Midbeast is actually like, he's quite a, I wouldn't say he's the best mechanical player, but he's got great intuition. He reminds me very similar when I watch like Tyler One. Like, he's not like amazing. He's not known for, he doesn't get his LP from mechanics. He gets his LP from being quite adaptable to a game. I think he's quite versatile. I think he's quite well-rounded. And I think he's good at like reading a map. I think he's actually quite smart.
I agree. So I think he's a very disciplined player as well. Yeah. He knows how to play discipline in
times.
Yeah,
he does. He actually does.
It's very hard to gank sometimes.
Yeah, I think he knows his shit. So I think that like Talia suits his like, it works well in Korea. Because if he's versing a lot of mechanically gifted players, it's like anti-mechanics in a way.
I see.
You
got it.
You see what I mean? Like, I think he's thought about this. I think he's actually a very smart individual who doesn't pretend he's not smart, but I think he's actually thought this through. Like, I think he's pretending that, oh, I'm just going to pick this, but I think he's thought it through, personally. I mean, Drew, let me know if I'm wrong.
That's Curtis's analysis from his lots of observations this podcast, guys. And then we've got Hyde on Forge. This guy's literally just straight up an Ornn one OTB. Trip, it's 300 games.
But you got to remember, Nathan, right?
Master Yi, one
Nathan,
trick.
We're looking at a Riven. Very biased
yes.
selection of yeah. people, right? These are one tricks. These streamers are one tricks.
No, that's how they got famous. that's how they got famous. That's why they're allowed to be professional.
That's right.
Professional
solo
players.
So it's not like
players.
It's not like these are people who thought to themselves, I'm going to like try and be the highest ranked solo queue player, period. It's like, obviously they're going to have to play their champion. Like, you know, like Azap and Vel'Koz and Spearshot and Elite 500 and whatever. You see what I mean? I think a Gurren here is the true representation of what a true, someone who doesn't care about what they play, that just wants to get high elo would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, he's got the track record, right? He's been consistent rank one EU for the longest time. And he's borderline rank one in Korea. And I think he's a great representation of how I would go about it. You know, I would probably do something very, very similar. Four champs, two hyper high mastery, third, you know, pretty high, and then fourth, just niche counter pick.
Yeah, so I guess it's sort of been...
But that's hard to do, by the way.
Yes.
That is very, very hard to do.
So yeah, it looks like I'd say if I just looking at these top 15 players, the it looks like the percentage would probably be, it looks like 60% would be, it's more weighted towards one tricks. But again, that's because of the sample size.
The people who went there.
And then you've got the people that more so like the pro players, because you saw Griffin and stuff like that. They're more, you know, high elo, like, you know, trying to be pro players and stuff
what
like that.
What was Griffin's pool again?
He was just quite diverse, lots of champions. Yeah, number three.
Yeah, he had quite a lot as well.
Yeah. So it's interesting sort of to see the way that these people are really, when people are serious, how they play.
Because when the chips are on the table, you actually get to see what they're going to do. That's right.
And I think this trip is just a really good, like, again, just observing, like, what are people doing? What's going on?
Yeah. Here? It's really interesting for me especially, and you, because Midbeast from Oss, and we know where he stands in Oss. So it'd be very interesting to see how he goes in his journey. But what we have noticed is look how low the cutoff is for Challenger.
Yeah.
Like, you can...
Just
like
because of the season.
The season start. Like, look at this. TF Blade is Challenger at 500 LP. At season peak, it's like 800 to 1K.
Yeah, I think it's something around that.
So it'll be interesting. Even with the Challenger now, you got to keep in mind that as the season... And I'm not discrediting... Not discrediting them at all. They're all incredibly good players. But, like, just got to keep in mind, like, the timing of their journey, you know, definitely was quite strategic in my mind anyway. So it'll be interesting where they end up, like, as the season progresses. I don't know how long they're going to stay there for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, thinking about what mine would look like. I mean, right now, if I was to do the climb, it would probably be just pure Rek'Sai one trick. Actually, no, it'd be Rek'Sai, like, mine would probably look more like TF Blades.
Like it'll be overwhelming Rek'Sai, one. Like
150,
Rek'Sai.
And then, like, Jarvan probably 40 games, and then, like... I mean, based on last season, maybe Volibear, but I'm trying to add more of an AP pick.
Yeah, so it'd be like, it'd be look like this.
Yeah, it would look like more of this. Like, I'd have a couple of champions with like 40 games and like overwhelming Rek'Sai.
So it'd be a champion of three or four, you think?
Three, yeah. I would need the AP pick in there.
Interesting.
But I don't know. I'm going to spend the next couple of months sort of just figuring that out currently.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to revisit and talk a little bit about Gurren, because he's picked up a lot of attention recently. So he his he does have English content. He streams mostly in his native language.
Mm.
English is his second language. And he has a YouTube channel called Be Uguren. And he's a really informative stream. He doesn't get sort of the numbers like all the other big ones who have more, I'd say, charisma and stuff, like the Dantes and the movies and stuff like that. But he's really, but people watch him because he's just, this guy is really good at the game. And this guy has broken so many narratives around the game. So what, there's a bit of a controversy. People were saying that Uguren is a reactive jungler, right? So Curtis, do you think you would be able to get to the top of a ladder being a reactive player?
Impossible.
So, yeah, I think that's impossible as well, right? That's just not possible.
You can't be, like, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
What is that definition? Yeah, yeah. What does reactive mean?
I mean, maybe this is an episode.
So you're waiting for the enemy to make mistakes. Yeah. Right? That's why people perceive reactive.
That's right, yes.
It's like, okay, you're sitting back. You're not really doing anything. You're just farming.
Yes, I think what it is it's you're farming. And you're not like doing flashy skirmishes.
You're not
flashy
trying to gank. Ways. You're not trying to...
You're not down like, you know, like you're, let's say as a jungler. Like, let's say maybe people's definition of a proactive jungler. Mm. You're that Elise or Lee Sin with 40 farm at 10 minutes, but right. You've killed all these people. Yeah. I think that's people's perception of the jungler.
What a proactive jungler is.
What a proactive jungler is, right? And watching Uguren's gameplay, I've been observing it. This guy is the definition of consistency and taking high percentage plays. I can't emphasize enough that, yes, his skirmishing is pretty much, I mean, I'm not going to say flawless, but it's at this level, right? Like, it's at, you know, the top, you know, against Korean pros, like, easily can go toe-to-toe with the best players in the world. So that's an element. But again, like, he full clears on champs like Jarvan. And
yeah, I watched a video where he full cleared on Jarvan.
Almost, like, most games. Mm. And really interestingly enough as well, he doesn't even take a health potion.
Mm.
He just, you know, every jungler goes health potion and stuff. Mm. But he has really optimized, really good clears. And then, so the way that he thinks about the game is, the enemy jungler's going to make their chess move. I'm going to make a better chess move after. He thinks about the game way forward in the future more so. It's like, because you know how people in League, they think that when someone makes a mistake, you need to instantly punish them. Uguren punishes them a minute later for losing tempo.
What's an example of
He's
that?
He's got a very good understanding of, all right, so let's say, for example, the most common thing, a level 3 gank, right? Let's say you do the enemy jungler does, like, you know, Red Krug drops his level 3 ganks. Uguren will do the full clear. Sometimes contest those camps, but he's, you know what, he's thinking, I'm going to actually contest or take away the next spawn of the Krugs.
Mm.
He's thinking of that at 2 minutes and 30 seconds in the game when that level 3 ganks happened, or it's like 2 minutes, 50 seconds. And he's thinking about what he's going to do at 4 minutes and 20 seconds when it spawns. Mm. He's punishing the tempo. He has a very good understanding of tempo and thinking really forward in the future. That I've noticed, he'll get dragons, like he's really good at getting dragons, especially Jarvan. He's plays the most. He will hold his smites. He has two smites. Instantly will start a dragon when he knows that the enemy jungle is at bad tempo loss. Mm. So he definitely really prioritizes neutral objectives as well. I've noticed. But this guy gets really. He's basically always strong, which is really interesting. And that's something that I've realized in my gameplay. I've realized I've gone to the extreme of I win games by capitalize on the enemy jungler counting gank, and I just get a triple kill and I win the game. But that can ruin me games all the time. Like, there's not that consistency element there. And I'll do that level 3 gank, and like the enemy jungler is smart. They know that I'm going to do that because I'm Rek'Sai, and Rek'Sai will level 3 ganks, and I just lose the game instantly because I just gave a triple kill to Graves. That's literally happened in one of my games the other week. So watching Uguren, and it's just really awesome to see. You know how people say about chaos and teammates dying and stuff? Dude, I just love his stoic nature. Like, you're just watching his stream, he's like, yep, that guy's dying. He'll like say it. He mentioned, he gets frustrated, he's like, oh, he's dying, oh, he's dying, I don't know why he's dying there. He's like, but he's always got an option, a play after. It's just really beautiful,
because
high percentage
strong.
League lunch. Because he's strong, and because he's only taking high percentage, high consistent plays.
But what the one observation I've made anyway is that he's so good at pinging ganks.
Yeah, tracking
so
as well.
So good right. tracking. Yeah,
again, he. So that's the powerful thing that he does when he's jungle. He's prepared for someone to die.
Yeah.
And already has a response.
Already has
like
a response.
Before the gank even happens. So he'll ping it. He's happy for them. If they die, they die, right?
Yeah, he pings it, but if they die, he'll just think about what's next.
He's not thinking, oh my God, they died, they suck. He's already thinking about the next move, right?
Because I watched one of his videos that he uploaded, like the early game, and he did a full clear on Jarvan. And he's like, okay, Viego's probably going to come mid. And then he kept assessing the whole time whether or not Viego, he like pinged that Viego could be coming.
But he's calculating the percentage of things in his head.
Yeah. And then he's like, but then it didn't happen. And then Viego showed on the other side. And he's like, okay, that's what Viego's doing. He's like, you can tell he's always thinking about what they're going to do. Very, very, in advance.
And it's, again, really cool to see because this is how I view the jungle. And that's why I coach. I just talk about high percentage because, you know, people always say, Nathan, so much chaos and stuff. Like, this guy is the definition of controlled chaos. I think it's really interesting to be seeing this.
What I will say, though, look, and this is from a mid laner's perspective. I don't understand the jungle role, right, at all, right?
Yeah.
What I will say is that it almost feels like he is created... He feels like an individual that has just played so much solo queue and has created, has optimized to the point it's like every decision is just that he's created a style just out of necessity. It's like, this is just what works in solo queue. And the reason I say this specifically in reference to solo queue is that what happens when you verse another calculated jungler? Like what happens? Like, and then we had this conversation off camera, and then it comes down to skirmishing.
That's what competitive is. Then they're basically what happens. If you put two Gurins into it with each other, then because then no one's making that first chess move.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? No one's making that first dumb decision. Because he will win every game versus a jungler that makes that one dumb decision. He'll win that game, right? But if he's versing him, right, another Gurin v2, then
it just gets the team fights in the mid to late game.
Right, and then it's just whoever can play their champ better and
play
around their team better.
Mm. I definitely think that's a bit of an oversimplification. Like, he definitely, you know, he does invade sometimes. Like, I saw him invade a Zac and stuff like that. Like, again, when it makes sense, when it's high percentage.
Yeah, when you say that high percentage, to me, that doesn't mean he doesn't invade.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that he doesn't gank. Yeah. It doesn't mean that he doesn't...
Those are high percentage plays.
He just makes decisions that make sense that are high percentage. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Lee. And it's just really been interesting to see everyone call this guy like a reactive jungler when I feel like that people get such a weird view of the game if that's the case, you know? Like, you know, again, this guy's breaking everyone's narrative. Dude, he's playing Jarvan and Elise. If it wouldn't be possible to win in the top of the hardest server in the world... If you're playing that stuff, it'd be impossible, but he's making it work. And this is like the first, again, like first player that's like done this. You know, this is really cool stuff to see.
Mm.
So I think it's really cool just to get people excited about, like, you know, we think that we know solo queue, and then some guy just comes and just breaks all the narratives down. Mm. You know what I mean? Like,
because people would think that if you go to Korea, there's all this action, there's ganking, fast pace. You got to like gank, and if you're not ganking, then like, you know, you're bad. But no, he's just kind of doing it his way, right?
Yeah, absolutely, saying. Doing it his way, and just playing really good League of Legends. It's just good League of Legends.
League of Legends is League of Legends.
It's not proactive. It's not reactive. It's just fucking League, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the thing, like, you know, people like. Remember Shern always hated the word playstyle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like there is playstyle.
It is kind of, isn't it? But I wouldn't really call it a playstyle.
No. When I watch Gurren, it's not playstyle. It's just good League of Legends.
Yeah.
That's it. I can't describe it in any other way.
Because you can break down. It's like, this jungler is making this decision. This is objectively a low percentage decision based off the information he has at that moment.
Correct.
And this decision is a better quality decision because he has XYZ information. He can't make that assumption about that person or what they might do based off where they started. Therefore, this is a better quality decision. You know, it's like, is that one more proactive or less proactive, whatever? I don't know. You can try and put a label on it, but it doesn't really do it justice. It just confuses it.
I think the whole labeling like that is just it's just a lazy way. It's just not getting into the details. Yeah. It's not getting into the details like in specific. Like, you know, go there, watch a Gurren stream, guys, and just look at the way he's breaking his decisions. It's all like, you know, just ticks all the every box. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. That's beautiful, perfect, no coin flipping, bam, bam, consistent. And that's the thing, what gets you to these ranks, guys, you know, like consistency. We talk about consistency all the time. It's so important.
Mm.
So it's definitely inspired me a lot in my gameplay. And I've realized I went to the extreme of inconsistency of playing too much for my lanes, not being strong enough. And then now I'm going to be like, okay, I'm going to let this person die here and I'm going to be able to trade some other
things. But I will say, you know, I think that skirmishing well is such a big part of the game.
It is, yes.
And he skirmishes. I saw this, like, again, that video that I saw. He was in a really uncomfortable position. And then he just turned on one person and like fought his way out of a situation that like it could have easily, if he didn't make that one decision, would turn to shit and the game's over.
Yeah.
You know, like his intuitive decision making in skirmishing in fights is just really well. And that's again what I observed in China, in Diamond in China, the skirmishing in Diamond in China was better than like it was probably equivalent of like mid to high like grandmaster and Oz, like yep. skirmishing wise.
Yep.
Right? Like high master, low grandmaster and Oz. Right, and so from a skirmishing perspective, that is that's such a big part of the game, because you're always fighting in a way, right? And so
yeah, but you've got to fight to
fight,
win.
Yeah, fight to determine the game.
You can't just not fight.
Yeah, that's right. So like you can, if you can fight well, like you're gonna have good results in solo queue as well, right? So this just ties into the broader discussion that there are so many ways to climb, not in the sense of decisions. I'm talking in terms of the skills that you decide, you emphasize. There are probably many junglers out there that he's versus that gives Aguirin a hard time, even though they're making poor decisions, but just fighting incredibly well.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Hmm. Like
they've like indexed in that skill set.
They've indexed in that skill set. That's right. And because League has so many skills, you can over index in particular skills.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking, for example, the other day, like I saw this Nunu one trick that he was playing against, and this Nunu one trick goes like Radiant Virtue Rush item, so he does like no damage, but he must just be ganking every, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
you know what I mean? But yeah. I mean, everyone's way higher than him, you know, but again, it's just like he did lose a game to that guy, you know,
yeah.
So it's still, but again, it's just, I think it's just demonstrating that Gurren's such a well-rounded, over the long term, his place, again, I'm not going to use that word, just playing good, beautiful League of Legends does get you very high rank. You know, I think this
pretty
is
awesome.
The best. So it's really awesome to see a Western player sort of do this as well. All right, Kyoto. So next topic here, sort of really good sort of tie on. Because you know, Kyoto, in this podcast, we're trying to educate the populace, the League of Legends player base. There's lots of misconceptions around the game, right? Like what climbing is, how do you climb? We did that case study, the gold 4K study, which opened up a lot of people's eyes. It's like, okay, what does actually a gold hardstyle player look like? How do they talk? How do they view the game? It's such an important aspect of things, right? How people view things. We actually had a comment, Curtis, on one of our recent videos. Oh, sorry, actually on episode 133, so way back.
Okay,
well, it was like an episode of Why We Decide to Coach Below Gold. And he said, this comment here, this guy called Rage Gay, he says, at 1 hour, Curtis talks about the 1v9 mentality and how he disagrees with it. I personally think you can't just do your job and expect to climb. If you only do your job to standard, then doesn't that mean you're at the rank you deserve to be? I thought the whole purpose of a ranked ladder was that the players that overperform go up and the ones that don't stagnate. Unless doing your job isn't in reference to your rank, but the ideal. Just curious on people's thoughts on that.
Wow, so such an interesting way of perceiving that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that he's struggling to think about what does it mean? How about we start with what does it mean when we say you got to do your, what is doing your job?
Yeah. Well, doing your job is performing well, right? That's the thing that he's not understanding, right?
Doing your job is the overperforming.
That is the overperforming. It's hard to do your job.
Doing your job, yeah.
It's hard to do your job.
If you're in your gold, let's use a gold game, for example. People are not only not doing their jobs properly, they're actively ruining, like by them not doing the job, their job, they're ruining the game. Like they're losing the game for their team, yep. basically. I'm in my games as a challenger player. I know games that I don't do my job. I fuck up. I've lost that game for my team.
Okay, so doing your job, let's give some examples. Let's give examples from a jungle and a mid perspective, okay?
Yep.
So but from a mid perspective, I am playing Malzahar, let's say there's a gold player. I'm going to use gold examples. Right? Gold for Malzahar player.
You did that video, Curtis, for example, the silver one, the guy that struggled gave up in silver, right? Does you use him as an example?
Example. Looking for a fight as Annie with no ultimate, or rocking up to a fight with no stun ready, available. Staying on the map with 2,000 gold and having Ludens in base. Like these things prevent you. You're not able to do your job because you're not putting yourself in that position. So if I were to tick those boxes, I'm saying no to fights where I don't have my alt ready. I'm going back to base when I have a goal for my key spikes. I am rocking up to fights with my stun ready so that when they show, I can kill them. Like, these things are doing your job, right?
Yep.
That is easy, very simple examples.
Yep. I mean, there's going to be lots of overlap. Obviously, staying on the map with lots of goblins. You have your reset for your mythic. Obviously, junglers are the best at ruining games because they do bad ganks and they can get counter ganked or triple killed or whatever like that. So, I mean, most of the time, doing your job is not taking bad ganks.
Yeah.
But let's frame it to say taking high quality ganks, like Urine type ganks. You know, he knows when something's a good gank and a bad gank. Champ mastery specific things, you know, again, fighting without your
ult. Or like flashing onto the back line rather than just peeling your AD carry.
Yep.
Things like that.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I would say pretty much if I actually just break down team fights, like fights in every game up until everyone's misplaying every fight, basically. It was every single fight. There's one person misplaying the fight. That theoretically is not doing your job. We might be saying, well, you know, Nathan Curtis, like, that's too unrealistic for my rank. It's like, well, again, that's how you differentiate yourself. That doing your job is how you climb.
No one is doing their job.
That's the first premise. No one is doing their job.
One is doing their job properly. So if you're doing your job to a set, like
even a 60%,
60-70%, you're probably way better than your counterpart anyway.
Like, if I was to say that someone doing their job at a 60-70% level, that's probably a diamond player.
Probably. Yeah. You know?
I want to get the specific quote he says. So, I thought the whole purpose of the rank ladder was that the players that overperform go up and the ones that don't stagnate. His definition of overperforming is sort of, again, going back to the Aguran reactive, proactive thing. Mm. People think that, like, what does that mean? What is overperforming? Does that mean
running around the map, killing everyone?
That's what people think. Like,
that's what people think.
Yeah. Again, watch Aguran's gameplay. Dude, it's so boring. It's so simple. But it's beautiful to watch still at the same time. Remember we say boring is sexy? Good League should be really boring.
It's like
boring.
Chovy. Chovy is a robot. You watch them play, and again, you watch his lane phase. He's tethering perfectly, CSing perfectly, trading perfectly, never dying to a gank, warding perfectly. Everything is just perfect. It's all basic. Mm. It's all just really fucking hard to do consistently every single game.
The execution of the game is so hard.
So hard.
And it's really interesting. It's like they're like gold case study. I think that the general player base, they think that because there's only four buttons in the game, he's basically saying everyone knows what to do. Everyone knows how to play their champion.
No, okay. This is actually so, I'm so glad you brought this up. So I came back from my trip, and one of my reflections, I did a lot of reflecting on my trip, and one of the reflections while I was gone was so there's mentors in my below goal program, right? People who are from the above goal program that have been in there, now it's platinum, but in the main program, MLA, been there for a while, and they've come over to help. And what I've noticed is that sometimes there can be me and some of the mentors aren't fully aligned in the way we're giving advice. So I started to think, okay, you know, me and the mentors need to get aligned and we need to make sure we're really talking about the same things in the same order or whatever. My point being, I was really trying to think about, of really observing the interactions between the mentors and the clients in the mid lane school. And what I noticed with these clients in the below goal program is that it is so many similarities in the sense that they say things like, they say things, oh, I'm really frustrated I lost this game. Look at my top laner this game. I lost this 30-minute team fight. Why? And, you know, some of the mentors get really kind of frustrated because they don't know why they're asking so many low-quality questions or not really understanding, like, the basics they need to get better at. And then it got me thinking, well, why are these clients, why are they acting that way? Why are these people asking these what we deem to think are low-quality questions? It's because, if you really dig deeper and deeper and deeper, it's because when an average person plays League, it ties back to what we said on the solo queue contract. They don't really understand what makes League difficult. That is the core, the bottom of the fucking barrel. That is what helps you have a good relationship with the game and be a good quality player, is understanding what makes League hard.
Absolutely.
And what makes League hard is not because the concepts individually are complicated. It's because the muscle memory required to execute the game well is insane. Mm. Because the game is not only, there's not only so many variables, the amount of, not the, the width, not the depth, is just so many. It's that the game is literally changing every 2 to 3 weeks. So not only is that that number of things growing, the things that you already learned have to be changed or altered, or the feeling of that now, or Lost Chapter is now, you know, not 1300 anymore. 1100, or that item now does that, not that. That doesn't give you that stat anymore. That changes that feeling in that one skirmish that you had with that champion. It's the feeling and the muscle memory required to execute well. That is the hard bit, right? And so what happens is that people think, oh, I've played my 40 games with this champ, and I watched this video, and I now understand the trading patterns. I'm like, congratulations, you just started.
That's just the beginning. You're aware of them.
You're now aware, and you can maybe execute it one in every 5 games. Congratulations. Yep. Mm. Now you got to be able to do that every time without even thinking about it. That's where the confusion starts.
Yeah, because they think that that part of the game is like maybe 20%, and then they're looking, when they do some, you know, people that join our coaching programs, they're looking for the strategies or the champion,
right,
or the you know, the new approach, the gimmicks. They think that's 80% of the game, but that's like, it's the opposite. It's like 90% is all the basics done well, yes, and 10% is like maybe the, you know, champions, the sexy stuff. Maybe a champ is really good. This,
like, patch, that's what I've realized in my program. I've got all this stuff, right? I've got this content. And I was having this conversation with one of the mentors this morning. I said, all this other stuff actually doesn't matter. What matters is these champ guides that we've done.
If you didn't get close to just executing everything, yes, I'm talking about the champ guides.
We've done this guide. If you just watched this guide that we've made in the platform, if you can execute, yes, like you said, like
40%
of it,
you're going to be gold.
You're gold.
Yeah.
Like, if you know how to, like, do what this is, play in accordance with this champ's identity, build these items, do these trading patterns, understand your identity in these fights, boom, you're gold.
But
that's hard.
It's hard to do.
It's hard to do because of the execution.
Yes, that's right. You've got to put in the games to execute that. Yeah.
That's right. And then I look at their OPG and they've got 12 ranked games played. I'm like, well, fuck me. Of course you're not going anywhere.
That's right.
It's not it's not complicated, but it is complicated.
That's always
that's the case. So yeah, my point being is, like, I think that, you know, where all these, we're having conversations sometimes with the league community where we're playing a different game. We're playing chess, they're playing checkers.
Hmm.
So we can't actually have, it's very difficult for us to have a real conversation because we don't have the same meanings for things. You're saying reactive game. We don't know what reactive gameplay means or proactive gameplay. It's like a good decision and a bad decision. So we can't even have a proper conversation until we're actually aligned on what game we're playing and what the terms actually mean.
That's a really good point. Yeah, like on Reddit and stuff like that. Yeah, the way a high elo player talks in a lot, yeah, they're sort of using the same language, but they
mean different things.
They mean different things, yeah.
It's like when you say champ mastery and, you know, get good at your clears, that you know what that means, but then champ mastery to someone else could mean something completely fucking different. You know?
Mm.
It's just, or to intensity. What does playing with intensity actually mean?
Mm.
And that is why I think we've had so much, there are people that, the people that get the 3-block thing, get it. And the people that get playing with intensity, eventually get it. But at the start, a lot of people don't. They say, oh, I want to, why can't I just play 8 games?
Mm.
But then when they get it, and they
know what it feels like to play with,
I'm exhausted after 2, I can't play more than 2.
Yeah.
But there's that moment where you have to bridge the gap, you know? But I think half the time, actually, no, I'll say majority of the time when we're having conversations with people outside of our community or with the broad, like, YouTube community or Reddit or whatever, it's we're in that middle where it's like they're over there, we're over here, we're trying to bridge that gap and help you see what we see. Now, we're not saying what we see is right, but we need to at least agree where we're both coming from first before we can actually have a proper discussion, because we're open to the idea that we might be wrong, and we probably are wrong on some things. We just got to start somewhere, though, you know? But yeah, it's very difficult to have that conversation.
And, you know, comments like this, you know, we're just slowly just correcting things. You know, again, this is going to take us years. Again, people have such a misinformed idea of ranked.
Mm.
Stuff like even like duo queue and flex.
Yeah.
Like I've even had people join my program. It's like, I'm a flex player. I'm like, he only plays flex.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, I just wanted to explain, like, you do not improve as a player. If anything, you get worse playing with teammates and with communication, and the matchmaking's all distorted, and you don't actually know what level you're at. Like, I got to start having that conversation, right. You know? And it's like, you know, it just, you know, all this sort of things, the misconceptions people have about the game is, we're just so, like, guys, like, you know, everyone thinks that league's been around for 10 years. Like, the way that I think about it is league is, like, still a little baby. It's like, if I was to think about it, human years, league has been around, like, we're still toddlers.
Mm.
Like, the general league community, in terms of how people view the game.
And I will say, though, that we have a responsibility to get better as educators.
That's right, absolutely.
To change, to educate. Because I made a video that I actually really regret making, which is one where I played in bronze to prove a point. It is such a misunderstood video.
That's a great example.
And that's my fault.
Yeah.
It's not their fault for missing. I'm the one who didn't make it clear enough. I remember, so I'm actually going to make a video correcting it. I actually kind of want to, like, because it's actually kind of cringe looking back on the, like,
the way you approached the video.
The way I approached the video, it was such a lazy video. I remember making it thinking, oh, I'm doing such a great service to the community, because the intention was good and there were some gems in there. Mm. But it's like, they shouldn't have to mine for the gems. The gems should just be appear on a silver platter.
Articulated very nicely.
Clearly packaged up, ribbon on top. Here you go, just open it. It's on my palm of my hand. You just got to watch this video. But instead, like, there's too much confusion. There's too many other things at play that disrupt the message. And then people get distracted by the things there, and that tear them away. They won't find the gems. And that just makes them even worse, and makes them view the game in an even worse, in a more negative way. So I've actually done damage, I think, to the community by making that video.
Interesting.
And that's my... And I could look at it through a negative, like fuck these people. Like, they, you know,
they don't get me.
Yeah, they don't get
me. Understand.
But that's my job as an educator in the industry. Yeah. So I have to redo that video. And I actually can't do it via playing. It's just impossible to play in lower ELO bracket without it becoming just silly. So I need to explain what my intention was with the video, and what the message was, and why it got interrupted. And where this all really came from, really think about it, is that I didn't understand the below gold person. Now that I've finally, like, met them and spoke to them and worked with them, like, I kind of understand. And I will say, like, one last thing about this. While I was on the plane, you know, our observation has been that coaching below gold has been way harder than coaching above master.
Absolutely. Right?
Coaching the lower ELO brackets is incredibly difficult. The way I view it, is that, imagine a net, okay? So imagine you've got this giant fishing net and encompassing all of the skills required to go from level 30 to challenger. You've got this massive net. There's all the possibilities of things that a person may not know or doesn't know. Like, they know nothing, right? So that, like, if you've got this, if you're an iron, you've got so much to learn. There's so much that you don't know, and there's so much that could be going wrong in your games. When you're in diamond,
you've got a lot of that, and that net's smaller.
Yeah, the net's way smaller. There's so much we can all agree upon that we all know. Like, everyone in diamond knows what all the champs do. We know what all the items do. We can all agree upon what a good reset is.
They probably have heard these concepts, but they don't really... They just need a little bit of a kick to understand or explain or show an example there.
Or they even do understand it. Either or. Like, if in diamond, there's so much that is already consolidated and understood. So the amount of things that could be going wrong in your play is way lower.
Hmm.
It's way less. Hmm. Now, it doesn't mean those things are difficult, easy to improve on. They're very, they'll be very, like, the muscle memory and execution of those things can be difficult, but the amount of things that could be going wrong is way less. Like, as someone in diamond, they're always going to know how to CS to a somewhat decent level. They're always going to know, you know, all these, like, these things that we deem as basic. But in iron, it could be anything. They're giving you, everything is going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So someone in iron could simultaneously, or in bronze could simultaneously, one of them could be good at CSing but bad at trading. One could not even know what a reset is, but someone might know a reset but has a bad. There's, like, an infinite amount of combinations of potential clients that you could have.
Yeah, that's right.
In below gold.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, and there's so many ways to, and there's so many ways, so many connections to be made there that you can climb in so many different ways. You can get to gold in a trillion different ways. So every, what I've noticed is that so many clients are unique. I thought it would be the other way around. I thought in Below Gold, the clients would be easier to work with because their problems would be basic and that the amount, the problems would be like more similar to each other. It's completely opposite. In the Midland Academy, what I've noticed, and Platinum Plus, they're actually a lot easier to work with because the problems are less. There's less possibility. Just one of my kind of observations, which is very interesting. Again, tying into the complexity of the game. And so tying back to the video, I did not understand that there's a lot of complexity there. And I tried to package up, simplify something that is incredibly fucking complicated. So I can understand why they would feel offended. And even though I tried to get across some good points, there's too much mud that they needed to sift through there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You said that that video was not that well thought out. I remember you made that video in like a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I was so excited. I'm like, this is easy. All I got to do is play these two games. And I got my point. I already knew what I wanted to get across. I wanted to show the idea essentially that you don't need to do anything special to win. That if I just sit there and do nothing, I just want to show you, if I sit there and literally just CS, not press flash and do absolutely nothing, like I could, there's going to be, the enemy are going to make so many mistakes that they would literally fall over themselves, which they did basically. Mm. Even though I lost, people say, oh, but you lost.
Yeah.
But it's like,
when you're like 19 and 2 or something.
Yeah. Like I'd like really, really good form, 19 and 2, like sitting there and we nearly won it. And that was the game with like three losing jungle, two losing sides. Mm. I just wanted to show that you could make a game difficult with doing literally nothing. Mm. That just shows how much you're sabotaging the game. But again, that's this, it's such a complicated.
Even now explaining it, you can't really explain it.
No, exactly. Well. It's just not a good video. So, you know, there's lessons you learn. And, you know, I think that it's our job, TLDR, it's our job to get better as educators.
God, I love League of Legends.
And we do. We've got so much to do. We've got so much work to do.
That's what I said. The way we are in the community right now, we're toddlers. We're in preschool right now, you know?
Yep.
We need to get better and we need to be way better at communicating the message.
Yes.
To grow up the League of Legends community, you know?
Yep.
All right, mailbag time, Curtis. Yep. Away we go. Mailbag. Jingle, jingle, jingle song. All righty then. Our first question here comes from Albert. The title of this email is "The Process is Bullshit." I have lost all motivation to play solo queue on the split reset. I'm currently 6-12 on the current reset after holding a 60% win rate for 300 games last split. I do everything that all of you disconnected high elo players claim to be the key to climbing. I play in 2-3 game blocks. I review my games with particular emphasis on what caused my deaths and how to avoid them. I one-trick Aurelion Sol and perform consistently. Yet with the influx of trash players returning to League for a new reset, it makes no difference. High elo players have this disconnected delusion mentality that all lanes don't lose. You generally only have one weak side in a game, and I'm here to tell you that it is absolute horse shit. I've had 10 games out of the 18 I played where either every lane gets absolutely shit stomped or I'm the only one that doesn't come out of early game with an obscene amount of deaths. You say that every game is winnable, but how am I supposed to win when the team is FFN before I can power spike because bot fed 20 kills in 15 minutes and top is down 3 levels and 60 CS and my jungler's AFK farm with zero intentions of getting neutral objectives or helping his team fight. This is beyond frustrating. It feels like there is no solution. I think this email is a really good time from our last topic, Curtis, talking about, you know, for someone like this who's a listener of our podcast, you know, tries to draw this and is still just like, okay, this is just this. Mm. You guys are talking out of your ass. And again, this is our failure as educators.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about this from a process perspective. Like, I think, obviously, you know, that we could easily just say, you've got such a small sample size. You know, you can't really say much about it. What I will say, I'm going to speak from it from an Aurelion Sol perspective. This is what I love doing nowadays. Just get into the champ specifics, right?
Specifics, yeah.
So ASOL. So I've done quite a bit of ASOL games myself. And ASOL. So ASOL is a champion where, as you know, you wrote this email in. What's his name again?
Albert.
Albert. You know, you're quite weak in the early game. And it is your responsibility to figure out a way to... to make the game easier for not only yourself, but for your team. So that's why you'll see a lot of Aurelion Souls, they'll even do straight Rylai's Rush. They might go, they might sometimes do Lost Chapter into Rylai's, or even just straight Rylai's Rush, just because they want that earlier spike, gives you a bit more stats, HP, etc., skirmishing ability. I will say, though, itemization and runes aside, it depends if you're going Comet and Scorch or not, or some A-Souls go like Gathering Storm and First Strike and shit like that, so I don't know what his setup is. So that stuff is important, but something to keep in mind. You can adapt your setup. And D-Ring also being quite, like, you can actually do damage in the early game if you go Scorch and D-Ring and Comet. That stuff aside, you know, A-Soul, all the small things matter. Like any other champ, but I'll say they matter more in A-Soul because it's so unforgiving. You make one mistake on A-Soul, it's just so hard to win the game. You know, what I found with A-Soul is that things like, you know, saying no to fights, or sometimes even adapting when you have your empowered R and saying yes to a fight that you think you might not be able to win, but you can win, getting creative with your W usage, like literally pinging way in advance that you don't want something to happen, giving that first one or two dragons, being super disciplined on your empowered R usage when you have it, literally hyper reviewing it. Like, did I get max value from my empowered R usage? It's having that mindset. It's like, if I had to do it, if I had to win this game, if I had to maximize my impact and make the game easier for my team, how would I do it? And these are the sorts of questions you need to be asking. Only one fight will make the difference. If you play that one fight better with your empowered R at that 20 minute mark or 18 minute mark, or you give that one dragon, you wait for that one spike, you do that W in a better direction, you be that a little bit more patient on your W or whatever it might be, that makes all
the games that you're playing a different game.
You're playing a different game.
People really struggle to understand. People think that, okay, if I played this fight a little bit better here, here, and here, the game's still unwinnable. I think that's actually what people think.
And
then,
again,
well,
this ties into the metaphor that I used in, I think, the last episode, which was like, imagine it like an electrical circuit. Imagine like a square with the wires connecting to all the lights, the nodes, whatever. All it takes is one of the wires to be disconnected for the whole circuit to not work. With A-Soul specifically, and I found this because I was struggling with A-Soul when I first played A-Soul in, it was like in Diamond. I was struggling in Diamond as a Challenger player in my server. I was struggling because it was only a few things missing. I had to tighten up my R usage. I had to tighten up my W usage creatively, aggressively in lane when they use their self-peel. So if an Ahri used a charm, before I wasn't using my W aggressively to punish it. Then after I changed it, I was. Or I was wasting my W in fights or doing like little things that all added up that lost me games.
That went from struggling in Diamond dominating, to just dominating.
Completely dominating.
It's like 20-0.
Literally looks like a Smurf. Basically overnight. So that's why I said to A-Soul players, watching other high-level Aurelion Soul players with an emphasis on one ability is what we spoke about in the other episode as well. So pick one ability. How are they using their W? Look at their W throughout their whole VOD. Watch multiple VODs. How are they using their W? How are they using their Q in lane? How are they using their Rs? Just get granular with a curious mindset. Ability usage, ability usage, ability usage. That and that alone will help you massively. So I'm not even going to talk about process because I feel like, again, there's no point. I feel like, again, this is a question about Aurelion Soul. For me, anyway.
For context, he's bronze too.
Right, okay.
When you were answering that question...
Oh, yeah, I was envisioning like a platinum player.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? Now, the way you would actually think about it differently. I should have mentioned that.
Yeah.
Before, because then that might change. Would that change how you answer that question in terms of Aurelion Soul perspective?
Look, I would still just massively emphasize champ mastery.
Yeah, that's again where it starts with.
It's just champ mastery.
Yeah.
Champ mastery is the bedrock. Just you got to get very good at the champ.
So wow. I think that advice goes. That's the practical. Really,
shit.
like if you want to like just cut through all the stuff, you gotta be. Again, like, you know, if we talk about a bronze player, I would say already here, you know, him coming at the angle of, you know, process is bullshit. 2-3 blocks.
Right.
He talks about he's playing consistently and stuff like that. That would mean if he's thinking that that's the problem, his view on what it actually looks like to get a good champion is the fact that he's getting to this stage. We can't even be talking about process.
That's right. Process doesn't actually matter that much in bronze.
No, absolutely not.
Straight up. You don't even need to review in bronze, really. Nope. In my opinion,
no one. We have had students do the process in that, but like, let's say 99.9% of players across 10 years, our friends, people we know, reviewing never made sense.
No.
You even describing to them what champ mastery, they wouldn't even think about it. That just would happen intuitively with them. That's or right. us, right? So
your job is to get very good at your champion. And this is what I would say, if I got that in my program, I would, and based off what I said to my mentor today, bring it back to champion mastery. Champion mastery, champion mastery, champion mastery. So like I said, it's hard to give advice for bronze that isn't in my, because I have an Aurelian Sword guide in my program that will literally outline exactly what you need to do in what order and when to focus on. But ultimately, you got to just study and watch ASOLs and how they're using their abilities. That's the most practical advice. And adopt the mentality of being curious and open-minded. If you're losing...
Well, he thinks he's losing because of his teammates. He's performing consistently, he says.
Like, that is the real problem, I guess, if we're talking outside a game. The fact that you're thinking you're playing well and losing because of your teammates, like, you need a reality check. Like, you are losing the games because you're making poor quality decisions, whether you like it or not. So that is the reality. So it's a tough pill to swallow. It's like the Matrix. It's like, you know, the blue pill, the red pill. Which one do you want? Do you want me to tell you that it's your teammates, or do you want the truth and that you're making bad decisions? And it's painful to hear that you're making bad decisions.
Especially when you've convinced yourself that you're performing consistently and you're doing the, you know, we talk about fake process all the time, right? He's obviously clearly got a fake process. When he reviews his deaths, I bet you there's something in there about actually blaming his team. He's not actually reviewing his desk properly.
Oh, my team, they made me take that play. Or my team just wanted to avoid that dragon. I'm like, oh, if that guy did that, then I wouldn't have died. Or
there's different levels of reviewing a death as well. You know, there's different ways you can go about that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on here. Next question here comes from Conrad. The title of this email is Anxiety About Missing Minions. Hi, Nathan and Curtis. I've been playing League on and off for quite some time and lately made the decision that I wanted to seriously focus in and try to climb this split with the goal of hitting the new Emerald rank as a mid laner. I've found lately that I end up making stupid mistakes because I'm stressing too much about missing minions. I keep showing up late to fights because I just need to get that cannon before I move to the dragon, or walking up even though I know the enemy jungler is around because I really don't want to miss those last three ranged minions. The interesting thing to me is that whenever I watch better players, they seem to not care about those moments as much. They manage to maintain 10 CS per minute, while I'm only getting about 7 to 8.5, but seem to stress way less about individual minions in certain situations. They'll start their recall when there are still 1 to 2 minions in the lane. They don't stress if a jungler pushes them off a few minions, or if a fight breaks out and they miss a wave to move for it. I haven't been able to figure out that balance of how to weight minions in my decision making in order to ensure good CS while not compromising the rest of my gameplay. I was wondering if you have any tips for how to think about those situations or any insights into what the pros do to maintain such good CS while still giving up obvious minions in those moments. And for context here, he actually wrote in. He's actually Emerald 3 right now with a 60% win rate.
Oh, so he must have climbed.
He must have already hit his goal. Maybe he solved the problem.
What I will say is that, you know, you cannot compare the CS you get to someone that's significantly higher than you. I have a video that says, like, you know, 10 CS a minute is so misunderstood. You know, there is so much that goes on inside 10 CS a minute. You shouldn't even be, if you're getting 7, you're fine. 7 CS a minute is fine. It's very rare that you need to get that much CS in the lower ELO brackets. And look, if you feel as though it's a problem, you know, you get specific. It's like, okay, why in this situation should I have actually gone to the fight? Why in this situation should I have just recalled? And the way I'd view it very practically, if I'm going to be very practical, is like, okay, what did I get versus what did I lose? Okay, because I stayed for this wave and didn't get these three minions and I missed my reset, now I'm stuck in lane and now I have no resources and now I'm going to miss, I can't find a reset at all. Now I'm going to lose more than I got. I stayed to get this cannon, but then my team got aced on dragon. I wasn't at the fight. Well, the cannon obviously wasn't worth your team dying at dragon. So it's about risk versus reward. It's about looking about, okay, this is the positives, these are the negatives, weighing it up, visualizing, and just moving on. Make note, move on. Make note, move on. Make note, move on. That's all it is. If I'm speaking from my experience, no shit, I want that cannon. But if my team is fighting on the Rift Herald, well, I think getting a double kill or getting double killed is more important than that cannon minion. It's really that simple.
It sounds like he's weighing up this number. He's playing the game for the CS, not to play. He's not playing League of Legends, right? And that's, I think that's where the stress is coming
that's
from.
It's
right?
In the 10th minute. Oh my god, I gotta get this. No, that's because that's what the pros do. They get 10th minute. Don't worry about that, right? Worry about the decision making and what is good in that one decision, that one moment. And then as you get better at more familiar, you familiarize yourself with those situations, just become easy.
Yeah, and it comes with experience, right? Like let's say you want to go for those three range minions. But you know, going for those three range minions, you're going to lose 40% of your health pool. So the pro player is thinking more so, okay, but it's just about forward thinking.
Yeah.
If I go for these three range minions, I lose 40%, and then I'm actually going to lose more CS in the long term,
that's
right?
That's correct.
So that's where the stress is coming from. It's coming from, you know, not thinking, just thinking about the immediate consequences and not the long-term.
It's like a Gurren. It's like a Gurren.
Same thing, yes.
Same thing. Gurren is thinking... Oh, my, like, okay, let's use like a diamond jungler. We'll think, oh, my mid lane is so dumb for dying to that gank. How could they die at level 3? And then a Gurren's thinking, oh, but I can get Krugs at 4 minutes 30.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
That's the difference, yes.
Right? And it's not like they're registering that information. They're just making use of that information in a way different way. You're absolutely spot on to me. That's actually how I feel. It's like, well, I do want that minion, but I know if I go for it and I get chunked or I have to use my ultimate or my flash to escape, I'm screwed because if I don't have flash in this matchup, I'll die to a gank later on.
Yes.
That's right.
And again, but you got to find those situations in the review. You need to...
Yes.
But the answers are all there for you in the review. You look at those three... And instead of... I think the way he views it is like, damn it, I missed those... I died because of those three range minions, but it's not thinking, okay, what happens if I didn't die here? You know, like seeing everything that's missed, that's always a really good tool you can weigh to review rather than thinking about, oh, that death is a mistake, but you got to think about the alternatives.
Yeah, how would this game have played out if I didn't die here?
Such a good question.
Yeah.
Really important question.
Yeah. 100%.
All right, well, I think that's it for mailbag. A bit of a shorter one today because Curtis needs to go sleep because he got back...
Well, I didn't sleep on the plane.
There you go, Curtis has no sleep. So he got back yesterday and he's fried and he's got a full week of coaching back here. So shorter mailbag here, but we still did a pretty decent size episode for you guys. Good work, guys.
Good work, team.
Keep on improving and we'll see you back next week.